Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. On this coming Tuesday, April 1st, Tulsa County voters will be asked to approve an expansion of the Tulsa jail costing $9.3 million, as well as a $45 million new juvenile justice center. Proposals will be funded by two 15-year sales tax initiatives in the county, totaling 0.067%. If both proposals pass, City of Tulsa's sales taxes would remain the same. In fact, if only one initiative passed, the sales tax rate would actually decrease. For other municipalities, though, passage would result in a fraction of a cent increase. The jail expansion would provide two additional jail pods for the general population to ease overcrowding, a pod specifically for juveniles, as well as a pod for mental health cases. The Juvenile Justice Center would consolidate the juvenile court into one facility and would include courtrooms, meeting rooms, administrative offices, a 96-bed detention center, as well as the home of the Community Intervention Center, which is located elsewhere in downtown, and would replace the current overcrowded center that is currently in disrepair. Joining me today are Tulsa County Commissioner for District 2, Karen Keith, as well as District Judge Doris Francine, the Chief Judge of the Juvenile Division since 2005. They join us to share their reasons why these new proposals are needed. Commissioner Keith, Judge Francine, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, it's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, I know getting a new juvenile justice center has been a priority for both of you for some time, but it seems like alternatively there's been either a lack of political will or the one time it did go before voters, a lack of voter will, if you will, to approve that. And, of course, it was part of Vision 2. It was a part of a big package. Why is this a critical need? And I think it's very appropriate that you're setting it aside by itself for an up or down vote. But why is this a critical need, Judge?
We outgrew it years ago. Our staff is spread out through the county. Half of our critical staff, probation counselors, day treatment, are located in a separate building at Pine in Cincinnati. Our stenographers are located in a double-wide trailer. How's that for government savings? And we're bursting at the seams. The building is dilapidated. Things don't work. Plumbing's broken. Heating and air is constantly having to be fixed. It is not a safe place to work. It is not a healthy environment in which to work. And we, again, need a building that accommodates what we do and all of our current staff, let alone growth.
Right, exactly. And I assume if it's not a healthy building for the staff, it's not really a healthy environment for
the community whatsoever.
For the juveniles who are coming through here.
Yeah. The waiting area is probably our biggest concern. We have outstanding security from the Tulsa County Sheriff's Office, but it does get difficult. It gets very crowded. There are, vying gang members sitting in the same room. There are little children seated there waiting for adoptions next to very ill adults whose parental rights might be terminated that day and are very upset. Prisoners come in and they sit close to that area inside of an office with the sheriff's department. So there's not that protection and separation of the victims from the perpetrators and the various types of cases that come in.
Are there also sort of lack of divisions between the various services the Juvenile Bureau does? I mean, you mentioned adoptions. You could be coming in for adoption. You could be sitting next to a gang member.
Well, that's correct. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And sometimes it's standing room only, too. But absolutely, the services, the best practices, if you will, or the best buildings for these juvenile courts have separations within those waiting areas so that, for example, if someone has filed a protective order or a restraining order against someone, they're not seated across from each other. There's just various areas.
That seems like a 101.
One would think, yes, one would think.
Now, Karen, give us a sense of your need for the priority for this.
Well, even before I was running, I toured the facility, and I met people like Judge Francine and their staff, and I just couldn't believe that we were running a facility like this in Tulsa. And as you listen to the judge, she knows that building. inside and out. And there are employees there. I met a gentleman named Eddie the other day. He's been there 30 years working in that building. And somehow they have incredible outcomes. And I'm so proud of what they do, but it's so unfair because I can promise you, you would not want to work in that building. And of course, if it's not good for them, it can't be good for our clients coming and going. But we are so fortunate to have the type of people working there. And of course, Judge Francine has built that team. And she's just been an incredible source, not just for Tulsa County, but also for the state. So we have an opportunity to get us a building that will create a model. We could be a model for what should be happening across the country. And, you know, this is our best shot at turning the lives of these kids around. And that's what we need to do. It's the best money a taxpayer could spend because you get them fixed now. They're not in our jail downtown, which costs, you know, $65 a night to house, or, you know, in the state prison.
In the prison, state
which
prison.
Is a loss of somebody who could be productive, a loss of another taxpayer. So what we do is, and what they do, I'm just their cheerleader, is just so important.
I was going to say, how does the building work against that idea of early intervention and sort of turning a life around? Does the building work against you in many ways?
Well, it does. It doesn't offer the type of space to, well, add the experts that we need or provide, you know, the safety. For example, very shortly, I'm hoping. It's been in the planning stages forever, and I don't plan well. But anyway, we will be starting an infant mental health court. Okay. Critical science behind it, that we are finally understanding the trauma that infants experience with the removal from their primary parent, caretaker. Babies will be coming to court. Therapists will be coming to court. Physicians will be coming to court to ensure that we're properly providing the care, the assessments, et cetera, that these babies need. Because if they don't receive it, then there is long-term consequences, and that's what we see in our delinquents. That's what we see in our prisoners. So this is just huge. In fact, it's one of the programs that I have the most hope with of changing the course of an individual's life. If we do it right from the beginning, I mean, it's the ultimate of prevention. Do I have room for the additional personnel that I need to be working with? The foster parents that are going to be coming in with these infants? Simple things. Do I have a bathroom with a changing table? No. You know, and yet every juvenile court that is designed appropriately will have changing tables in the bathrooms. Or a room that can take care and they can get the baby away from the general public when they're coughing and hacking and sick, et cetera. No, I don't have that. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, it's critical for these infants and for the court team to check and assure that this baby's healthy and properly working and to observe the parent with this child.
Now, I know that a lot of times conferences take place in hallways because there's just not space.
I have absolutely no room for the attorneys to meet with their clientele. No, I
so,
don't.
So attorneys meet out in an open hallway?
They meet in an open hallway or they meet in the corner of our waiting area during a time where the public is, there's not so much of the public there, which would be late afternoons. They do that because a lot of our people don't have transportation. And there is transportation to the court, or the court's the only place that they know that they won't get lost.
No.
And so, and security reasons sometimes, but there's absolutely no privacy between attorney-client.
Now, are there rooms that are functioning as official rooms that are really not designed for that purpose? Like, I know you have a courtroom, but are there other rooms that are doing various functions that they weren't really designed for? I've heard there...
Well, we have hallways.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a...
Do you have official proceedings taking place in hallways?
Well, no, not really official proceedings.
But say maybe something besides going before a judge, maybe it's a meeting with somebody from the county versus a family, and that's taking place,
that's
an official interaction
place.
In
yeah.
a hallway.
Yeah, or witnesses talking with the attorneys
uh-huh.
that are getting ready to testify. But we really do have a hallway in which there are two desks in the hallway. It's the only place we can put these people.
Yeah. You know, the hallways will also have all the files, the rolling files are in all the hallways, and you'll watch staff come out of their little office, which is, this office is twice the size of any of the offices out there. This is where you are right now, easily. Yeah. Yeah. And but they walk out in the hallway to get their files. That's where they have to have that stuff. I mean, you're talking about a building from the 60s. Remember, the cinder block type with the, they had the green space in the middle.
Right.
Well, that green space is now filled in with offices. There's no green space left. And then the other green space that was off, on the south side of the building, that's now where we have a double wide with documents in it.
Yeah.
And so those folks have to come and go in and to get into the main building in inclement weather, no matter what. They've got to,
inches of water.
And one other thing, when you're talking about restrooms, there are not adequate restrooms, not just for staff.
For anybody.
I mean, let alone the public. There are not enough restrooms in that building.
Waiting room only.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, what are we talking about proposing as a replacement? The building's supposed to cost, $45
million? $45
million. And from what I can see, I've seen the architectural renderings. Now, I don't know if it's going to be the final design or not.
No, those were conceptual.
Yeah, they looked great conceptually.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it probably looked a little more than $45 million.
Right.
But what do you hope to have in place as a part of a new juvenile justice center?
Oh, adequate courtrooms and properly built courtrooms. And what I mean by that is we still do jury trials. We have jury trials in juvenile cases in Oklahoma, one of six states.
Mm-hmm.
Probably will remain. And I only have one, maybe two courtrooms that can conduct jury trials. So it actually needs to be built.
So I'm guessing the juries come in that same waiting room as everybody else.
Well, initially, yes. They come from downtown's courthouse, and mm-hmm. they are driven over. They drive over, and then they sit in the waiting room. We hope to catch them all, And then they have to sit in the courtroom so that we can isolate them from the general public, including those that are there for the trial. And that means I can't use my courtroom then because the jury's in there. So mm-hmm. any pretrial motions and such are done in another courtroom or done in my office, which is also smaller than your office.
Absolutely.
But within the studio.
Studio here. Anyway, so we need real courtrooms, and we probably need an additional courtroom because this place needs to last a mm-hmm. while. So to anticipate the increase of cases due to population. We need appropriate offices and good-sized offices so that families and kids can meet with our counselors and have plenty of room for everybody mm-hmm. rather than closed, cramped space. We need space for our attorneys that can meet with their clientele, as well as appropriate space for the public defender's office that represents all abused children in the county,
mm-hmm.
and the assistant district attorneys that handle all the cases in juvenile court. And for them, that means space for their interns. It means conference rooms. It means adequate space for their files and their administrative people. Of course, there's all the administrative aspect of it. We want to bring our probation staff back in. We would like to bring our day treatment people back in. And because we work so closely with social service agencies, because juvenile court's about rehabilitation.
Yes,
so
we hope.
We require a lot of assistance from our community partners. We really do need adequate space for their liaisons so that, for example, as parents are leaving our courtrooms and required to sign up for substance abuse treatment, counseling, whatever, they can go directly there and get that intake done immediately. Detention facility. Part of what we do, of course, unfortunately, at times requires placing a child in a secure detention facility while he or she awaits a trial or adjudication for their safety as well as the community's. There is thought of expanding that,
mm-hmm.
If not just for us, but for surrounding counties. We call it where we have regional beds. And so we assist our neighboring counties in providing that space for them, as well as additional space for treatment for them. And, of course, they require education. They require recreation. They require a kitchen.
Well, and I would think there would be a varying level of detainment, too. I mean, you may be in for one reason. Maybe another reason is more serious and it's more segregating.
Well, not so much that as we have boys and girls together.
Yeah.
So we would have a wing for the girls only, and we would have a different space for the boys. And so that comes into play. Another thing that we really do need to consolidate is that we currently have a community intervention center. It's located in the old police building downtown, where 911 center used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what that is for, and it really assists our patrol officers, that when they find a child that they have to put into protective custody, then instead of driving around for hours with these kids trying to locate a parent or determine if they're detention eligible or whatever, they can go to this facility and drop them off there. And then the employees of that facility can assess and screen and get these kids to the right place, whether that be a shelter, whether that be our detention facility, or whether that be home. And it is an outstanding facility, outstanding work, but that really needs to be our gateway into our facility and our detention facility. So there are plans to bring that community intervention center to our location.
My guests today are Judge Doris Francine, the Chief Judge of the Tulsa County Juvenile Bureau, and Karen Keith, Tulsa County Commissioner, as Tulsa County residents will be going to the polls on April 1st to consider a dedicated sales tax to fund a $45 million juvenile justice center along with a $9.3 million jail expansion. Now, Karen, I will let you tell us how this sales tax works, because in the city of Tulsa, if both of these initiatives pass, there will be no change in the sales tax, correct?
Correct. And it's an old four-to-fix tax that everybody, even in the suburbs, used to pay. It rolled off a few years ago for some of the suburbs, so they'll be paying it again, but it's not a new tax they haven't seen before. And I think the sheriff has said it well. This is something, I mean, he is such a supporter of the juvenile facility being fixed. He's been advocating very strongly for years as well. And, you know, he says it well in that it is something we need for everybody in this county. Some people want to say, our kids don't need it, but there are kids there that come and use our facility throughout the county.
Well, and if you ever find yourself in that situation, you want to have the best possible way to change the circumstances of why you're there in the first place. I mean,
that's exactly right.
You know, rehabilitation was the aim throughout our criminal justice system, and nowadays not so much, but I think in the juvenile area, this is still absolutely paramount.
I mean, we like to say it is not a penal facility. You know, some of these in other parts of the country, there's one in particular that was actually built into a neighborhood. And they use it as a community center. It's not a hardened building. It doesn't, you know, we get emails from people saying, you know, we're building another prison. No, we're not. And 41%, right, Judge, of what comes into that building are the adoption and the abuse and neglect, and the rest are the other kids. And I would also encourage folks, if they want to put their eyeballs on it, they can come for a tour. We can set those up at either the jail or juvenile, or just log on to protectourcounty.org, and there's a video you can look at, and you'll get a real good idea of what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And also, just YouTube, Tulsa Juvenile Justice, YouTube. And just put in Tulsa Juvenile Justice and it'll pop up.
And you can actually see what the conditions are like.
You can see firsthand what the conditions
are. Do we keep track of how well we're doing at rehabilitation in the county?
I mean, with the delinquency we have just recently that was looked at, and it's approximately a 6 to 7% recidivism rate, which is outstanding compared to other jurisdictions that are thrilled when they have 17%.
Mm.
So we do really, really well. It's a very small percentage of youth that come into our delinquency end of it that are problematic and are a threat to themselves or their communities. But what we are finding is that many of those youth, and I think we all knew this, have come from the child welfare system or should have been in the child welfare system. So we work very hard with community assistance in what we call the duly adjudicated child, the child that had been or is currently in the welfare system and has committed a delinquent act, either due to trauma, which is what we see a lot, or intellectual disability is an issue that causes them to act aggressively. Certain behaviors, and you can't equate them to when adults commit those behaviors. So we have both systems finally, actually three systems, because the Department of Mental Health has been very, very helpful coming together to address these children. And as we do, our recidivism rates will get better.
Now, earlier you spoke about this very early childhood intervention when children are removed from the homes. And I've read
infant
some
of mental health, yeah, 0 to 3. It's
I know.
I've
read so much research which says that even if you're a family where you're switching daycare during those first 3 years often, you're creating real trauma in the child that manifests itself later.
Yep.
Is this up and running yet?
Not yet. We're in the training stage. Oh, we've been training forever. we're in the training stages, and we're also in looking for funding, a little bit of help, because there are very specialized roles for people in that teamwork. But I think we're just going to go ahead and plow ahead.
Well, I think if you had a new facility, this would make it a lot
easier.
Oh,
it would make it heavenly, heavenly, heavenly. But I'm so excited about that.
All right. Well, let's pivot to the jail part of the equation, because this is also a very important need. Whether people vote for this or not, we have jail inmates laying on the floor on what are called boats, which are basically plastic liners with maybe a bedroll out in the middle of the common area. And more importantly, for mental health people who are in jail basically for minor crimes in which they're almost locked up to protect themselves as much as anything else, we don't have the facilities.
We don't, and it's critical. We are not alone in this problem. It's happening across the country in county jails. New York Times has been writing about it. National Public Radio's had several stories. And it's something we must address as a community. Would I like to see something on the front end to keep them out of our jail? Yes. But right now, we know we have to deal with this population, and we will always have inmates with mental health issues. So we're not overbuilding, because some people say, well, that's not what we should be doing, but it's the hand we've been dealt. We have to deal with it, and we have to do a better job. But we simply can't with the existing facilities, and we need more staff trained to deal with them. But you can't put these folks in the general population. And, Judge, we have sometimes 350 people a day on psychotropic drugs in our jail system. Mm-hmm. So this is a critical need. What I would like for us to do is become, again, a model for how you deal with this population. We have to do a better job.
Now, one of the things I've heard is that a lot of times, because of the lack of beds, you're basically putting a lot of the mental health patients in pretty much isolation cells.
Yes,
where they're
really
locked up 20, which is probably the worst thing you could do for somebody with mental health.
But they're also problems. Endangered when if they're acting out in the general population. They're at risk, and so are the folks with them. So
the plan is to create some dedicated pods for mental health, and there would be a range of confinement so that if you're, say, on your medications and you would have a special common area where you could be out among not the general population, but in a mental health pod.
Area. And we will have lots of help from experts in terms of how we put that together.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a sense of what some of the other parts of this $9 million proposal will do?
For jail, yes. We'll have two pods that will just deal with the overcrowding. As you know, we have state inmates that the state, it's cheaper for them to keep them in our jail, which really isn't fair, but that's, the hand we've been dealt. And I, again, do not think we're overbuilding for the future. If we're doing this build-out, we'll always need them. I mean, hopefully the state will begin to deal with this problem and relieve some of the overcrowding.
Actually, that'd be a good problem to have, not have over.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, but I do not think we're overbuilding for the future with that. And, Judge, why don't you talk about the need for a juvenile pod that's also part of this at the jail?
There's a category of youth that our law provides. It's like a carrot and a stick, scared straight type of theory. That's called blended sentencing, youthful offender. And when they're initially arrested, they are housed at the David L. Moss Center pursuant to federal law. And consequently, state law youth have to be completely separated by sight and sound from any adult offender or, for that matter, even people who work with adult offenders. very critical. And right now, the jail does not have adequate facilities for the young ladies that would meet that criteria.
So what's happening right
now? They stay in, my understanding is they stay in, or have stayed in the medical portion of the facility. And as of, I would say, within the last few months, I have just said, bring the girls to us. We'll take care of them in our detention facility, which is fine. And so they also, the jail, just like we do, have to provide education and certain needs. It's just a completely different treatment type of situation that is not necessarily there for the adults. So that's a critical aspect of it as far as the pods. And let me say about this mental health, I worked in a federal prison back in my youth, and it was a hospital. And the mental health issues of prisoners or those that are arrested, plus I was a municipal judge and I saw a lot of mental health issues, and it will always be there. I mean, people are currently saying it's because we don't have facilities and we don't have the appropriate hospitals, and that's true. We do not. And so consequently, mental health can create symptoms and behaviors that can be considered criminal. But they have to be treated appropriately. Isolation is not always the best thing, okay? In fact, many states have been sued because of that. And there are appropriate treatment. We have the right treatment providers that are willing to work within the jail. The other frustration I have sometimes in listening at the public hearings, and because I'm a judge, I order people into jail, okay? Sheriff Glanz does not have the ability to say, I'm not taking him. He just doesn't. Right. I mean, he would be in contempt of court if he tried that. He does not have the ability to tell police officers, I'm turning you down when you arrest someone. Okay, he has to accept it. There is no discretion to it. And so it is what it is. And if we want to work or criticize, then the community needs to come together and say, okay, let's talk about building different mental health facilities, or let's talk about getting the Department of Corrections and funding all of the reform that we had supposedly passed to reform, right? Mm-hmm. That we're not doing. Let's do those things. And I know that we're doing a lot of it already in this community. You can listen to D.A. Harris, and he will talk about all the treatment courts. But we need to do that. But in the meantime, the sheriff is in charge of running the jail. And he needs to do it right without violating anyone's civil rights. And that's what he's asking the community to support.
All right. People will go to the polls on April 1st to consider a dedicated sales tax to fund a $9.3 million jail expansion, as well as a $45 million juvenile justice center. Now, we know that the jail expansion will just be pods added at the jail site. Now, there has been some talk about where you're going to put this juvenile justice center, because it was supposed to be near the jail, and now that's been ruled out. Where are we looking at a site at this point, particularly?
We've got several sites that we're looking at.
Mainly in the downtown area?
The near downtown, yes. Mm-hmm. In the near downtown and within the IDL. So as soon as this passes, and we are both counting on it passing, we will be taking a closer look and trying to narrow down the site and get that rolling. Mm-hmm. But right now it's not prudent to say this site or that site if you're going to negotiate on the price. So
exactly. Well, Judge Francine, Commissioner Keith, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Tulsa County Commissioner for District 2, Karen Keith, and District Judge Doris Francine, the Chief Judge of the Tulsa County Juvenile Bureau, speaking with us on Studio Tulsa about their support of the sales tax initiative, which will go before Tulsa County voters on April 1st. Voters will be asked to approve a dedicated sales tax to fund a $9.3 million jail expansion, as well as the construction of a $45 million juvenile justice center. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just find Studio Tulsa. You can look through our most recent shows and search our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.